web services.
Welcome to the Cloudonaut podcast. We are your hosts, Andreas and
Michael Wittig. This podcast is all about AWS and gives you insights into our day-to-day work with AWS. This is episode number 70, and we are recording this on February the 9th in 2023. In case you are watching this live on YouTube, feel free to ask your questions in the comments. You can also reach us on LinkedIn, Mastodon, or via email. You find all the details in the video or the show notes.
Okay, Michael. So before we start, here's a message from our partner, Demicon. So as you know, AWS expertise is in high demand, and our partner Demicon is looking for a cloud operations lead working remotely from Germany or the EU. So if you are into leading a growing team of cloud architects and DevOps engineers, then this is for you. Demicon is a large technical consulting company and is leading the Atlassian full service provider, a leading service provider here in Germany. So join Demicon building their new business unit with a focus on cloud technologies and AWS. In case that sounds interesting to you, you will find a link to this job in the show notes. Check that out and apply today.
All right, Andrea. So let's dive into what happened in the last 7 days, basically, when we do our day-to-day work. So the first thing is, and it is AWS related, but not the usual information. So our book AWS in Action 3rd edition is going to print next week, actually. So we finally made it.
Yay!
After a lot of reading through what they call first pages and stuff like this. So basically checking everything once again. This means for all our MEEP buyers of the book, so people who bought the book before it was actually fully available, they will receive their final ebook, I think probably in 1 or 2 weeks. And if you bought a real book, like a printed book, you will receive that in, I would say, probably a month or so from now. So that's the schedule that we received from Manning, our publisher. So that's big news for us. And if you bought the book, we hope you like it. And feel free to send us your feedback. We are really looking forward to that. We are very happy that it's finally done. Right, Andreas?
Yes. So, Michael, I thought maybe we should do a book release party live. That would be cool.
Yes.
So when the first printed book arrives at our our office, maybe we should do a release party. Let's check that out. Okay. As I was reading through the chapters again of AWS in Action, the 3rd edition, I stumbled upon a chapter that I rewrote a little bit because a lot changed here, and I wanted to bring this to this episode. So AWS announced this week a new SLA for ElastiCache, Redis, and MemoryDB, which now both come with an SLA of 99.99% availability. So this is a 10-time increase of the availability promise they make here. And this reminded me about MemoryDB and Redis. So Michael, I don't know, did you ever dive into MemoryDB before? So do you know what this is all about?
No, just the docs, basically.
So that's a good chance for me to bring you up to date here. So basically, ElastiCache for Redis manages an in-memory database cluster with Redis for you. So we have been using Redis quite some time, Michael. So I think the first time we used it was when building that online banking system. I think we used Redis back then because it is both a key value store in memory and also has this PubSub system to send messages. So this is, I think, two interesting features of Redis. And so what ElastiCache was doing is basically managing Redis nodes for you. And it's quite complicated. So of course you can have different setups. You can just spin up a single Redis instance. You can spin up multiple Redis instances, and then you have the option of having multiple shards or just having replicas. So basically you have a lot of different options there. It's quite quite complicated to get your head around this. And but one thing with ElasticCache for Redis is, so by nature, Redis is an in-memory database. And Redis itself, it also writes, I would say, kind of a transaction log to storage. So you can also enable that persistence option. But ElasticCache for Redis is using that feature. You can use it to basically restore your cache, but it's not intended to be really a first-class database that you rely on for persistence. So it is really an in-memory database, and you have that persistence, which is fine because you might need to restore your caches, so not the whole load hits your database and stuff like that. But it's not really intended for being the only source for persisting your data. Yeah, that's an important thing to know when architecting stuff. But then AWS announced MemoryDB, and basically MemoryDB is, I would say MemoryDB is for Redis what Aurora is for MySQL and Postgres. So it's a proprietary implementation of the Redis database protocol, basically. And it uses a persistent transaction log. So here you can rely that when MemoryDB has basically persist or basically acknowledged your write, it gets persisted to this distributed transaction log. So distributed among multiple availability zones by default. And so this is interesting because now you have basically both a mixture of an in-memory database and also a database that guarantees persisting your data. And I think that's quite cool. That's the most important thing. And what you get with that is, for example, one important thing is the replicas. So you have one primary node, and then you can have replica nodes distributed among availability zones, and they all basically work on the same transaction log, distributed transaction log. And in case the primary node fails, a replica node just picks up based on the same data that has been stored in the transaction log. And so you don't have any data loss or anything by switching from a primary node to a replica node. So that's interesting. And yeah, I think also just the idea that you have a persistent data replicated among data centers, but also you have it in memory. So it's you have really low read latencies and still benefit from the persistence. So I think that's a really cool thing to keep in mind when architecting for AWS. So other things like a shopping cart, a session, stuff that you do not want to lose. But it's also an advantage to have that in memory to read it fast. So this is a good thing here. I think the difference, so when you compare to Redis, the standalone Redis with ElasticCache, the difference is, of course, writing data takes longer. So you have a millisecond latency when it comes to writing data and microsecond latency when it comes to reading data. So compared to just writing it to memory, of course, it's a little bit slower to persist it to storage and then replicate it to other nodes. But also keep in mind the replicas are still eventually consistent. So reading the data from the replicas is eventually consistent.
So basically that could be a good option for like read heavy workloads where you still want to benefit from the in-memory aspect and the writes are not so.
And of course it also is for workloads where the whole thing fits into memory. So yeah, you need to find an instance type that, so I haven't looked up the numbers, but so there's definitely an end to it where it no longer fits into memory. But yeah, other than that, so I don't know, shopping carts, maybe even product data, stuff like that could go in such a database. Yeah.
Okay, Andreas. So I was working on one issue that I have for quite some time, and I explain it like this. So there are tools that run in some AWS accounts that just automatically tag all the new resources with some tags. So for example, the user that created the resource, maybe the timestamp, things like that. But this approach does not really work well with infrastructure as code, right? Because what we all learn when we start using infrastructure as code is that out-of-band changes are bad because they kind of, I mean, you shouldn't change your infrastructure from the outside and not using your infrastructure as code tool. So the problem is, in some large organizations, there is kind of an enforced way of tagging that is just auto-applied to all the resources. And now every time you run Terraform, it will just remove all the auto-added tags because it truly believes that this is not how the infrastructure should look like because it's not in my Terraform file. So I am going to delete them. And then the other tool might notice that, and then they just re-add the tags, and then there's kind of a back and forth between the tools, and you kind of see lots of changes in your Terraform plan that are not really necessary. So one solution for that problem is, and it took me some time to actually find that, because you can exclude certain attributes in Terraform from causing changes to the resource. So you could, like in every resource block, you could ignore changes to specific tags, for example. But this is, of course, a lot of work, because if all the resources are automatically tagged, you have to copy that block to all the resources. So it turns out that you can have something like a global exclude of some tag keys by configuring the AWS provider in Terraform. And the parameter is called ignore tags. And you have two options here. You can either specify the tag keys, like the whole tag key, or you can also specify prefixes of tags. So using this approach, I was able, by like inserting three lines into my provider configuration, I was able to get rid of those annoying changes that are constantly detected by Terraform, because there's some other tools adding tags to the resources that are managed by Terraform. And I find this a really cool solution. If you're using CloudFormation, the whole problem doesn't really matter that much, because if you update a resource, or if you update your stack with CloudFormation and you don't make a change to the resource, it will never touch the tags. It will detect, or hopefully will detect, the drift if you run drift detection. So fingers crossed that it works, but it should. But there's no real way to solve the problem with CloudFormation. So if for any reason you change tags, then likely you will override the existing or the like out of band added tags. So yeah, this is something that you really can only do with Terraform, as far as I know, at least. And it is really helpful in this situation that I described. So yeah, I wanted to share that.
I do have one question. So I configured the AWS provider with the ignore tags, but this is a list of the prefixes it should ignore. Can I also have it the other way around? So basically only specify the tags that I use myself in my configuration. That would be even more interesting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's not possible. No, I would also like that approach more, but it's not possible. Yeah,
Because I don't have control over all the tools that are adding tags to my resource, but I have control over my code, and I know which tags I am adding. So that would be
I mean, Terraform Play. Yeah, I think it's probably a little bit harder to figure that out. But yeah, sure. I mean, there shouldn't be too many tools tagging resources randomly. Hopefully, at least, but. Okay. Yeah, I mean, maybe there will be two or three tools. I mean, I know tools for backup, for example, backup schedules and stuff like this. I mean, there are tools, hopefully it's two or three and add more.
Okay, you're right. Okay, Michael, anything else, or is that all for this week?
That's it.
Perfect. So we will be back next week. Subscribe to our newsletter, podcast, or YouTube channel to make sure you're not missing the upcoming shows. And also, we are looking forward to your feedback. Hello at cloudonaut.io, or find us on LinkedIn or Mastodon.
Yeah, and we also want to thank our supporters who make the show possible. And you can please consider becoming a supporter as well. So they're basically one-time and recurring options. So check out the video description or the show notes to see the details. So thank you very much for listening, and we will see you next week.
Yeah, thanks. Bye.